You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson. Oh, God. I'm here with Guy Routledge of Food Rush and Ollie Lloyd of Great British Left. And they're just taking the mickey out. We haven't even started yet. So can you, like, behave yourself, boys, please?
Sorry.
Right,
sorry,
hi there. Sir. My name is Sue Nelson. And for the next hour, we will be talking about, coconuts and veganism.
An interesting combination.
Yeah, coconuts and vegans. So I'm losing it completely here.
I'm just going to power through, though.
Yeah, sorry, but I'm just going to keep going. So our studio guests are Rachel Hugh and Neil Potts, and they're from the Verger Company.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Specifically asked you to bring in your vegan burger, which you've neglected to do.
I know. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Would you like to explain, Rachel, why you haven't? Although I can understand completely, and that will give me a chance to just recover myself.
I promise. We had every intention to bring it, and then we literally put it in the car and the sauce went everywhere.
Yeah, it didn't travel.
And
well.
It didn't look very good. So I thought, if you're already not convinced about vegan food, this one is not going to convince you. So
also gives you a reason to come find us.
Yeah. Mm,
true. Uh-huh.
Good we can
point.
Talk about that.
What he said. Very
good. Two good reasons.
We're also joined by Jacob Thundill of Cocofina. And you may remember Jacob, he was on Dragon's Den in 2016. He was very successful on Dragon's Den, weren't you, Jacob?
Well, I didn't think it would be like that. I was terrified of looking like an idiot in front of my son. Of course, no father wants to do that, but I was pleased when I came out.
Yeah, excellent. We're going to talk a lot about that later. First of all, you've got talk to me about coconuts, Ollie. You own a coconut plantation.
No. My wife is Sri Lankan, so in the family there are a few coconut trees, and I've never been to see them. I've been to Sri Lanka many times, but I have never been to see them.
How many have you got?
They measure in perches there or something. So there are a certain number of perches of coconut plantation. I've never been there. It, you know, apparently it still produces coconuts. Her uncle manages it. That's all I know.
Okay. So, well, it must be quite big then. It must be more than like four trees.
It's probably a few more than four or five trees.
Mm. That's quite impressive, though. Well, do you like coconuts? I love
coconuts. I do. I actually am the proud owner of a coconut. What was the correct term? The clamp onto the side and
cocoa
then
tap.
A coconut to actually sort of take the coconut.
Oh, it's a Sri Lankan kitchen accessory. It's called coconut grater.
Coconut grater. Mm. That you're lethal.
Yeah. What does that do then?
So you hold the coconut and then you try and make sure you don't actually take your entire hand off, because it's a series of blades in a sort of circular shape that goes around the inside of the coconut, and the game is
around the inside.
Yes,
so it doesn't take the husk off from the outside.
No. So you'd have to have the knife. I've broken two knives doing that.
sounds really
apparently
dangerous.
Use a hammer. I didn't find that out until later. But basically, you can do it yourself, which I've done a couple of times.
Great. So let's talk about veganism to start with, and we're going to go on to coconuts afterwards. We were talking about vegans, and I know you from Great British Chefs, you've done some research into that area quite a lot recently, and then beginning to get some trends. Perhaps you can tell Rachel and Neil sorts of things that you've been finding, whether it rings true.
Let's do a quiz. We did a quiz on the last one.
Oh my
so
God.
What percentage of the UK do you think claim, self-identify as vegan?
About five.
About five.
Five people.
Okay, 5%. And do you think it is more or less amongst women or men?
More women, I'd
say. I would say
more
so, yeah.
And would you say it is higher or lower in the young audience?
Young, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah.
So nationally it's 3%.
Okay.
Now, there's obviously, you know, that means 2.5 to 3.5 sort of thing. Amongst women it goes up to about 3.7, men goes up to about 2.6 something. And then amongst the younger audience, so what I'm calling 18 to 24, it's up at 7%.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, you know, it's still a marginal approach, you know, 3%. It's still pretty small, but it's getting stronger. And that data is April of this year, and we're rechecking that number in a few weeks. So,
but is that just people who are vegan all the time? Or, I mean, there must be lots more people who are saying, well, I'm going to you know, try and be a bit more vegan in my diet, you know, flexibly, and maybe might do that two or three times a week, or you know, work hard to have a vegan meal perhaps during the day or something like that.
Yeah, and I think there are definitely two camps, and we were talking about this term flexitarian the other, you know, earlier about, you know, are there a group of people who are vegan on a Monday or, you know, on certain days of the week, or are they vegan in January? I mean, I certainly think, and I think it's interesting to try and pull those two things apart because they are quite different, but we don't have the number on that yet, but we're trying to get to the number.
So why did you decide to be vegan in the first place?
So it started with me, I guess. So I for years and years struggled with my stomach. I had all sorts of pains and problems with my stomach. It wasn't IBS, it wasn't something that people could put a label on. I went to see about six different doctors, actually in two different countries, and nobody could figure out what was going on. So I had every scan and test you can imagine. Nobody could figure it out. So we thought, well, the answer has to be in food. You know, this kind of stuff can't just be happening. So we basically did huge experiments with our food. We ditched certain things. We got rid of this. We added this. We took this out. And I should say we'd been huge, well, me especially, been huge meat eaters for 30 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're not lifelong vegans or anything. So we are coming at it from a fairly general perspective. But yeah, so we found the answer in food. Basically, for me, it was dairy and red meat. Both of those I consumed huge amounts of. As soon as I stopped doing that, my stomach issues literally instantly stopped, wow. like overnight. So for me, that was easy. You know, that was.
But why go? Do you eat fish at all?
No, not anymore. No.
So last time you've cut that out as well.
Yeah, because to be honest, once we did that, the only thing left was really chicken and fish. To be honest, like when you start reading about, you know, the animal issues and the environmental issues, probably is the biggest one for me. It's an easy decision. You know, for us, it was quite easy. And Rachel obviously supported me in doing that. So
Rachel, did you just become a vegan because you love him, or did you become a vegan? You know, were you thinking?
And he cooks you dinner.
Rachel was a silent vegan anyway.
So, but was it something you were interested in anyway?
It's all love, of course. No, it was very much, I grew up in a household which wasn't really meat orientated at all. My mum didn't really eat very much meat. At Christmas time, we would have the nut roast. So for me, it was a natural progression. The only thing I was eating consistently was probably dairy. I would have milk with my cereal or whatever. Pretty usual, you know, society kind of moves. And it was only as a result of us doing a lot of research that we suddenly, and obviously Neil's health issues, overnight we made that decision. And then it was as a result of that, and we started watching documentaries. We read up quite a lot about what we were doing, making sure that we were getting enough nutrients, making sure that we were getting what we needed. And then it was pretty much an easy decision for us, I think.
But with all due respect, you live in London, and you know it is much easier, I'm surmising, to cut something out of your diet and have so much more, you know, choice in London than if perhaps you were in Preston or something or whatever, because so many people are geared up to it here. So in a way, it makes it a little bit easier. Do you think that's a fair comment?
I think. The perception that we're cutting something out makes you feel like you're missing out on something. But for us, we fulfilled what we wanted with extra vegetables, lentils, legumes, all of these things that you can buy in your local Sainsbury's, Tesco's, whatever supermarket you go to. And the fact that we then started doing our research as to what meals we can eat, doing a bit of research on Google, or however you usually look at, you know, your recipes, maybe you have your old grandma's cookbook at home.
I think what I'm saying is the eating out thing, though. I mean, because when you're eating at home, obviously you can do all that, and you can get everything, you know. I mean, vegetables, presumably. You can get everything. But I was thinking, you know, here in London, if you want to pop out for lunch because you haven't prepared anything yourself, or you haven't got a lunchbox or something, or some friends are taking you out for dinner, you know, you don't consider you a real pain, because actually here most restaurants will have some type of options.
Yeah, it's surprising. I think there's these labels which get attached to things which make food inaccessible to so many people. You know, people say that's vegan, that's not. Mm. Well, look at this, for example. You know, that's this. I'm pointing
Can I just say we're in the radio? Yeah,
sorry,
that's
difficult. So the coconut bar, the cocofina bar. So vegan, you know, it's not a vegan food, it's a coconut. I think people think I don't eat vegan food, but you know, you think falafel, you think of, you know, a vegetable wrap, you think of, you know, Pret's Christmas sandwich, their veggie Christmas sandwich is vegan. You know, it's these things where I think you just got to get over these labels. And I think you're right, to an extent, there are more places which accommodate, you know, vegans and vegetarians in London. That's probably true, but it's not as difficult as you might think. I think, and also the big chains now are all catching on. You know, even Pizza Express is now doing vegan cheese and loads of them. I mean,
I'd have to say I couldn't disagree with that more, in the sense that I think it is difficult. I think that, you know, if you take British food, it is fundamentally animal based, right? And if you go to your average pub, right, they have rubbish options in the vegetarian space. And in most restaurants have rubbish options.
And that's
in the
not
vegetarian
even vegan.
Place.
That's just
vegetarian. And I think there is a massive challenge if this country, or if any country, and I think this is where actually South India is a particularly good example where this isn't the case, is there is a whole load of skills people need to learn to be able to cook vegetables well. We cook vegetables terribly. You know, I've been talking to chefs about, you know, 20 years ago, you'd steam a piece of asparagus for 20 minutes, you know, and then cover it in lard. I mean, you know, the fact is, people find it very hard to cook vegetables. And I think, you know, I think one underestimates that, you know, at one's peril, because actually I think that's one of the major barriers to reducing the amount of meat consumption.
Well, I think a lot of people see them as an afterthought. They're the side dish rather than the main event. And I mean, I've eaten some amazing vegetarian and vegan food, but it almost becomes more like a bit of a treat to do that, because you're having something which is very different to the norm. I mean, you know, as a run-of-the-mill meat eater myself.
Yeah,
completely.
Yeah, it is really actually quite difficult. You're right. To cook a vegetable well to a really high level that, you know, is equivalent to a really high level restaurant which serves meat is pretty difficult. You know, you get a good piece of steak, a good quality piece of steak, you season it well. Most people could cook that.
Yeah.
But a vegetable, you're right, it is, you know, it is very difficult. Yeah, there's not many restaurants that serve very high level vegetarian food.
I mean, all that you need to do to cook a good steak is a very hot flame, some salt, and that's it.
Exactly.
You know, and actually it's great produce and salt and fire. Actually,
and the same with fish, actually.
Yeah. And the same is true with fish.
Yeah.
But actually, yes, that will work with asparagus and certain other things, but actually it does take a lot more, I think, a lot more ingredients, a lot more thought, a lot more skills and processes to get vegetarian food right.
So, the Virga Company. Now, you're trying to lead a bit of a foodie revolution. You've got 100% plant-based burger, which you've neglected to bring with you because it was in the car.
They want us to go and visit them.
And they want us to go and visit. You operate a pop-up restaurant most of your times in London at various events. You now have a permanent home in Spitalfields Market. And this is because you had a crowdfunding target of 180,000. That's a huge amount of money, which you literally smashed in a couple of days, which just shows how interested people are, I think. Now, I have to tell you that if somebody did me a plant-based burger and it tasted as juicy and as nice and had the same texture as a steak, you know, hamburger, I'd choose the vegan one any time. Yeah. And is that the thinking behind what you did?
Oh, completely. That was absolutely our thought process. The moment that we created this whole business, we knew that we wanted to approach it from the mindset of a meat eater's headspace. So it had to be flavorsome. The texture we didn't want it to be all mushy and disgusting. Everything that you usually thought about a veggie burger would be. And everything about it was that amazing taste and texture that you'd have from chewing into your favorite burger. So every single patty that we've created has been with that mindset. Every single patty is completely different. We don't use the same thing and dress it in a different way. We've made sure that everything has its own family and its own headspace, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think the point is we've been vegan for 18 months and we're both...
You're quite new to it then, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
So we still think in many ways...
Like a meat eater.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So for us... Like, I think to myself, well, what would the vegan burger need to be for me to have eaten it 2 years ago? And we try and go from there. You know, it's a pretty simple approach, but we...
And do you refer to it as a vegan burger or a plant-based burger?
It's tricky.
Good question.
We
do refer to our whole business as plant-based, mainly because when we started our whole company, we wanted to target a mainstream audience. In order to do that, the there were so many connotations with the word veganism, especially back when we started our business. So we didn't want to attach any kind of labels to our business. We weren't about attaching labels to anything. So we wanted everybody to try our food. We wanted everybody to come along, no matter how they ate. We didn't care how you usually eat on a Monday to Friday, Monday, Saturday, Sunday. If you want to come to us for meatless Monday, perfect. I think, and that's the reason why we kind of said 100% plant-based burgers.
Because it's more acceptable in a way, or less... what's the word? Sort of less.
Well, it's
worry.
Kind of less, less, more inclusive, I'd probably say.
Yeah.
Because vegan definitely has this connotation of, you know, it's certain people with certain kind of moral standpoint.
Who are a bit preachy. Mm-hmm.
Not in all cases, but yeah, it's you know, probably for some. But yeah, plant-based is a little bit more kind of widely inclusive. And it's, I mean, it's certainly one of the massive trends that we're likely to see for 2018.
And it hasn't got negative connotations.
No, it's almost entirely positive because it's, you know, better for the environment and it's, you know, healthy and all of that kind of good
and
stuff.
And Ollie, in the research that you do, we're in the UK, we still love our burgers, don't we?
Burgers remain massive. I mean, it's, I think it's one of those kind of comfort foods that everyone returns to and loves. I mean, but to be fair, though, not all burgers are equal. I think there is.
Absolutely.
But I was thinking if you're going to do something vegan or plant-based, it's a really good one to attack because there's a natural... it's not going to go away, is it, the longing for a burger?
No, I think, though, the challenge in some ways, I've always found sort of meat substitutes kind of a sort of bit unappealing in the sense that I actually think that the idea is, you know, I think there is nothing finer than a beautifully cooked piece of asparagus or an amazing carrot. I don't want a carrot to try and pretend to be a steak.
Spot
so I suppose my kind of, I mean, my only pushback is in some ways about, you're right, the burger allows you a route in and is a way in which you can engage people who would not normally be engaged. So it's on the plant-based thing. But I think also vegetables need to be allowed to stand.
Yeah, but for me, if you can crack the burger thing and people start coming to you and going, wow, that's plant-based, what else can these guys do? You know, well, again, was that your sort of theory?
Well, I think just tapping onto what you said, I think that's exactly the point for us is, you know, people say, oh, does it taste like a burger? Does it look like a burger? And a lot of vegans and there's a lot of excitement about these burgers that look and taste like beef in the US and are coming here and they're good. You know, we've tried them. They're good. They taste bizarrely like beef. But as you say, we left meat behind for a reason. I don't want to eat something that looks or tastes like meat anymore. So for us, they're two separate things. You know, yes, it's a burger, but it's made from vegetables. It's not designed to look or taste like meat. And we're quite kind of clear on that. You know, we don't ever need it to resemble
anything. So you're not sort of hamstringing yourself around that and giving yourself those sort of boundaries.
No,
you're just looking at what you can do.
And it's never going to, you know, unless you make something really artificial, it's never going to look or taste, have the texture of meat. It's a vegetable.
what is the vegetable? What is it made of?
All sorts. We have all sorts.
We have five separate patties and they're all completely made from 100% vegetables, seeds, nuts, grains, legumes. So everything's completely natural and from a natural background. So we have, for example, a Mexican burger, which has jalapenos. It has butter beans inside and then it's topped with like smashed avocado. Has
that
a hot chili
sauce.
That
sounds like Ollie's cup of tea. That's just your sort of thing, isn't it, Ollie?
What, the spice you're
yeah,
referring to.
Yeah.
It's quite spicy.
With avocado.
It's quite spicy.
We've had to dial it down a bit, actually, because we were getting feedback that it was too spicy, so...
You're attracting the wrong clientele.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you haven't been down.
You're going to have to visit.
I'm going to go check it out. I'm in Spitalfields tonight, actually. So I'll go and have a burger. Yeah,
yeah, perfect. Yeah.
And how's it being received locally? You know, are you getting lots of community people coming, you know, in the vicinity or sort of visitors? Or
yeah, honestly, it's been so great for us to build a whole new community around Spitalfields Market. So we've had people who wouldn't necessarily eat a plant-based burger because they've never been able to access it before. So they've been coming to us maybe on a Monday instead of going to their usual meat burger place, or they would come to us for a Friday treat. So we've had the most amazing time building new customers, people who've never heard of us before. Spitalfields Market's amazing hub. It's in the center of Shoreditch. It's where everybody goes to celebrate, especially like Christmas market time. It's a beautiful place to be and we're having such a great time.
Wow.
Is your place a restaurant or more of a stall?
So right now we did a pop-up for a long-term pop-up for just outside Lululemon. It's their space predominantly and they hire it to other kind of stalls. And we're there until this Friday, actually. We've been there for 6 weeks, and Friday's our last day, and our permanent restaurant opens next year.
Very exciting indeed.
In Spitalfields again.
Mm. No one knows.
No one knows.
No.
Not even you.
Yes, we know.
Oh, you know.
Solicitor knows.
Solicitor knows.
Solicitor knows, yeah. And the other thing that you're doing is you're completely cashless. As far as that's concerned in terms of a sort of business decision, is that a good idea?
Yeah, I think
We think so. Neil feels quite passionate about this, so I'll let him answer it.
I do. I mean, I think, first of all, don't quote me on figures, and I won't even try to quote figures, but there's an overwhelming shift in the reduction of the use of cash to the use of cards, Apple Watches, smartphones. All these things now can make payments very easily. So first of all, for us, it's a convenience thing. A, it helps a queue move faster. If customers can pay with a card and staff haven't got to mess around, you know, changing gloves.
You mean to say you haven't got a pensioner who's rummaging around their pocket saying, I've just got some change left, and then they'll give you like 5, 10p.
You know what? There are people who come and they're like, whoa, what do you mean you don't take cash? How ridiculous. We've even had people say, is it legal that you don't take cash? You know what? It does happen. We do get it. But we kind of feel like in a few years' time, this is going to be the norm. And also for us, if you look at it from a business perspective, especially a small business perspective, counting cash every night, getting it to a bank every night, you know, reconciling that in accounts. It's all really boring stuff, but it takes hours. And unless you're a huge company who can pay a big cash van to come every night and collect your cash, it's hard work. You know, it's wasted time. And also, particularly for us now, we're outdoors. Most of our pop-ups have been not in really secure locations. So we're faced with either having thousands of pounds sitting in a till in the open space, you know, with our staff completely at risk of handling that. Or we just do it like this. You know, it costs us 1% to pay iZettle to process our transactions. So for us, it's
a good point, actually. I haven't heard anybody else say that.
It's
on the
cheaper.
Radio.
Yeah, you know? That's really interesting. And you must pay a lot less in fees than you do in the time that it would take you
so
to
reconcile.
So
we pay 1%.
Brilliant.
And I think, you know, if we add that up compared to everything else I've just said, it's easy for us, you know. It's kind of, we feel like it's a bit different as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you're talking about it, so it's good.
No, I think it's really interesting.
I don't use cash. I never use cash if I could help it.
It's very rare.
I don't in London, but sometimes I go other places, you think, oh, my, I don't even have any.
Exactly, yeah.
But, and what are you going to add, you know, when you go to your new premises, what are you going to add to your range, your vegan range, your plant-based range?
So we've had our infamous mac and cheese, which we've been serving through our pop-ups. We haven't served it in our Spitalfields market stall because we wanted to kind of hold it back, redefine it, and then bring it back in the restaurant. So that's going to be back. Everybody keeps emailing and asking, so it's definitely coming. We have all of our shakes. So we have berry shakes, mocha shakes, banana caramel. So they'll all be coming back. And else we have?
Well, it's desserts. I think desserts is the big thing that we haven't had for the last couple of months because we've been outdoors and there's nobody really wants cold desserts in the middle of freezing temperatures. So that'll all be back. We've got a few new things in development with Andrew, the chef who works with us. So there's lots of exciting stuff. Yeah.
So exciting. Yeah. Very good. We're going to have to take a trot down there, aren't we?
Yeah, sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know where we're going.
Ah, but when they'll tell us, and then we'll make a little visit.
When are you planning to announce the new location?
In January.
January, there you go. So later on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So Rachel Hugh and Neil Potts, the Burger Company, thank you very much. We're going to have a little break, and hopefully we'll have a little taste of Jacob's coconut bars.
Sounds good.
See you in a minute.
You've joined us at a very good time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Our savvy software development guys have just qualified for a chunky government cash payout, thanks to our new friends from Breakthrough Funding. Yeah, sorry, that just slipped out.
Government handout?
No, not a handout, but recognition for our clever thinking. Now it'll be down to you to help us kick it further forward.
Leave it to me.
Your company could qualify for Innovation Cash too. Find out online now by answering just 6 qualifying questions at breakthroughfunding.com. Yeah!
So there you go. And we're back. And I have next to me the lovely Jacob Thundill. And he's very, very kindly bought along some of his Cocafina products, which we're going to try on air. Luckily for us, they're vegan. So that's pretty handy.
It's worked out well, hasn't it?
Just tell us about your Dragon's Den experience. Why did you go on there? Because you've got to be a bit mad to go on there.
Well, I was sitting in Wagamama's once. I used to work at a bank 12 years ago in the city. So I was talking to my colleagues, and at the time I was talking about starting Cocofino. And then I said to them, I wonder if I went on Dragon's Den and I got 5 yeses, what that would impact my business. And then someone reminded me that a few years down the line, and I said, I'll do it. And
I got it was a bit of a dare, in a way.
Wasn't, because the stars all aligned together, because it was BBC researcher that contacted me rather than me applying to go on there. But they asked me, they prompted me to apply. So someone contacted me. My colleague thought it was spam because it literally said, we're taking applications for new contestants. Do you wish to apply? And then we called the number to find out if it was spam. And then, you know, 4 or 5 weeks down the line, we were going through a trial run, and then we were in the den because basically Deborah Meaden was coming to the natural and organic food exhibition in Excel. And one of the rules in the den are that you can't have previously met anyone. So we got rushed into through the process. And I'm not someone that gets scared that easily because I'm the coconut man, right? I'm quite a chilled out guy. So I was in the den and I was waiting in front of the lift for 8 minutes. And it really started to unsettle me a little bit. And I mean, my colleague said that if it was herself, she would have been crying at that point, because I started looking at the walls because the walls weren't real. So I started inspecting the walls. The lights went green and I hadn't walked into the lift. And they kept flashing the lights. Eventually, I saw that, you know, they were waiting for me and I wasn't there. So I got in.
And how much did you ask for?
I asked for 75,000 for I think it was 5%. Yes, 5%.
And what did you end up getting?
So 75,000 for 20%, but I buy back 10%. So eventually got 2 dragons for 5% each.
And that was Nick Jenkins and Sarah Willingham.
Yeah, that was.
And have they helped you with your business at all?
They've helped me. So as it stands now, we haven't signed yet because they wanted a lot
don't
of...
Don't trust them then.
Not that. They wanted a lot of information from us before they signed.
Yeah.
So one of the things that they wanted was management reporting. At the time, I wasn't able to do it because I came from the world of spreadsheets and banking. So when I started my business, I started it without it. So it was almost like a rebellion to planning. The business grew quite rapidly, and then I didn't have the time to do all the
sort fancy, due diligence
fancy things for the accounts. So when they asked me to show me margin per customer, per product, you know, that wasn't something that I was able to do just like that. It took me like 7-8 months to do it, but then I had a stroke of luck out of it because I used a system called Sage to do it. And then Sage found out that we were using the platform, and they spent millions of pounds publicizing that we use Sage. So so that was quite a good relationship. They're a great company, and they put us in front of London Heathrow Airport, Newcastle Airport. They branded the whole of Bond Street Station. Amazing. They did quite a lot. So
that's quite a good break.
And then we were so busy with all this stuff, and then we just thought, we just haven't got the time to provide all this information. We're still in discussions.
Yeah, trying to sell it. So you bought some
lovely... Mark the valuation up.
Yeah.
The valuation has moved up.
Well, exactly. No, but if they bring money in, it can't be at the valuation from Dragon's Den.
No.
Yeah, but the thing is, for us, we...
Do you need them?
We don't currently, but I mean, we feel like we owe something to
these
people.
No, but I think there's a point here, which is, and you know, I say this as a fellow entrepreneur, which is... When you back a business, if you are an investor who asks for huge amounts of material, what you're trying to do ultimately is mitigate risk.
Yeah.
And that's understandable. When you're making investment, you need to make a decision. But it is possible for investors to be so demanding in their requirements that they actually distract management and reduce the chance of businesses succeeding. Now, sometimes investors are very useful. They're asking good process questions. But in the end, if you've managed to get through this period without needing their money, there's no way that valuation should stand.
No, do you need it?
Well, we didn't go there for the money in the first place.
You went there for
the We went there thinking...
out of Sage. Oh, blimey, that's amazing.
We were thinking that we were going to meet some people who had some brilliant contacts and, because I was in the coffee shop in Great Portland Street, and the two ladies there were making bulletproof coffee with coconut oil. And I told them, like, this is what I do. And they asked me, how do you start a business? You know, and not many people tell you about that. And I was, you know, saying, how do you start a business? And what I've tried to do now is, you know, I want to organize something like a meetup or something where we can talk and make those initial steps before you get to that first million.
Mm. Well, Ollie and I both got businesses that passed the million mark, and it's taken me, God, it took me at least 2 years. It's taken you a long time as well. It's tough, isn't it? It's hard. It's really hard.
It's tough, and the demands are on all sorts.
And I don't think I could have taken 7 weeks out to prepare a load of figures because we'd have died by then in the first instance.
Yeah, and I think you've got to be, investors, complicated people.
Mm, complicated people. So moving on, let's have a look at your lovely products. So you've got in front of us, you've got your Cocofina snack bars. They're organic and they're vegan and they're wholesome. We're going to do a little tasting because I've got some expert vegans down the end of their studio.
Brilliant.
There. Yeah. So do you want to have a taste? What one have you got, Neil?
I have got coconut macaroon.
Mm. Rachel?
The same one.
Oh, you've got to have a different one. You've got a different one. It's pineapple or coconut and cocoa?
Oh,
or coconut and date.
So I have coconut and pineapple.
Right, so have a little taste here. So why coconuts for a start? You say you're the coconut man while we're all tucking into us. Why coconuts?
Self-professed. My job title is chief nut. So,
chief nut. Mm.
Yeah. And the main reason being I'm from a place called Kerala, and Kerala in Sanskrit means the land of the coconut trees. So whether it's...
meant to be.
Yeah, starters, main course,
birthright.
Drinks, desserts. Mm. Everything's got coconut in it. So when I was growing up, you know, I cook a lot now, being a single parent. But when I was growing up, there wasn't a meal where there was no coconut in it. And I'm pretty sure you will appreciate that. You know, if you go to Sri Lanka, it's the same. We have in the backyard, we have around 40 trees.
Mm. Yeah. And I've just tasted your coconut and cocoa organic. Really moist and crunchy. What I like is the texture. Mm. You know, some of them are a bit soggy. They're sort of held together almost like...
It's like a very dense, almost like... It reminds me a bit of a chewy Rice Krispie treat kind of thing. I was just looking at the ingredients on the back, and there is there's oats in there as well as the dried fruit. Mm. So I've got the coconut and pineapple one.
Very, Neil, very tasty. Expert vegan down the end.
Expert vegan.
Yeah.
18 months in.
Yeah, exactly. That's an expert, right, I think. It's excellent. It tastes like a better version of a Bounty, minus the chocolate. It's excellent.
You would have egg white in a macaroon.
Right.
So we've tried not to use the egg white. And also, you know, for the record, I'm not vegan. But I try and eat vegan meals when I can because my son's, like, very pro-meat. And it'll be a shame to get him converted without him... making up his mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah, or just cutting down on his meat. He doesn't have to have meat all the time.
No, he doesn't. Last night, he had... What did he have? He had...
bacon sandwich.
Chickpeas.
Okay.
So I try it sometimes, but it's quite hard. Mm. But when I take lunch to the office, I try and make vegetarian options.
Mm. Rachel, what one have you got there for you?
So I've got the coconut and pineapple. I was already a massive fan of your bars anyway. So as a go-to, just pick-me-up bar, I think it's fantastic. And there aren't many in the market that do this job. So honestly, I am a huge fan. They're delicious.
Mm. And if you're the coconut king, honestly, she's the coconut queen. She adores anything
I
coconut.
I love anything. So. Anything coconut. So this is delicious.
You can make all sorts of things out of coconuts as well, though, can't you? I mean, you've got some other products here.
Our range of products.
What else we got here?
Our range of products is divided into eat, drink, and cook. So in the drink category, we have coconut water. And we've just gone organic with that. In the next 2 weeks, our drinks will be organic. Because what we thought was in the mainstream market, there was so much competition to bring the quality and the price down of the product. We decided to go the other way because we're usually sold in the health food trade. Mm. So we don't have the same kind of customer pressure. I'm not talking about margin pressure. I'm talking more in terms of customer. The customer's reading the label. So we're quite fortunate to be able to provide a quality product. So we decided to up the game in that. In terms of cook, we've got coconut oil. We've got a soy sauce alternative. So we ferment coconut vinegar and coconut nectar together to make this. And we're starting to export this out to Asia now. So we actually got nominated for an export award, and also the UKTI did a case study on our company because we were exporting soy sauce to places like Asia.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So
and where's the product made?
In the UK.
In the UK.
So the bars are made in the UK. So predominantly the production happens in the UK. Raw materials are imported from 5 countries, mainly Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, Malaysia. And then we produce it here and export it to 28 countries.
And can we talk about arak?
Yes.
When is the arak coming?
I had arak in Eastcote a couple
of
weeks ago.
Would you like to explain what arak is arak for our listeners who don't know what it is?
I should really let the coconut man do this. It's my favorite. It's a Sri Lankan spirit.
So there's two spirits you have from coconut. One is the sap that you use to make the coconut nectar. You can ferment it to make something like beer, and that's called toddy. And then arak is distilled. So it's, you know, you can distill arak from coconut water, or you can distill it from any other sources. But arak's kind of
phenomenal.
50-60% proof, isn't it?
Look at his face.
He's had a good time.
For me, when you arrive in Sri Lanka, you arrive at someone's house and they're like, you know, do you want an arak and ginger beer with a lime in it? You're on holiday.
Heaven.
I had one in Eastcote. There is a Sri Lankan restaurant there, and they were serving arak.
So they definitely serve it at Hoppers.
Okay.
And there's actually a brand called Rockland that is like one of the original families that made arak. They're starting to sell in the UK. We should get them on. You'll enjoy them, actually.
Always up for trying a bit of drink, get them on. So you've got, this looks lovely as well, this natural soy sauce. Is this vegan? Can you have this, Rachel? Yeah, that looks really good.
The whole range is vegan. And if you look at...
Just because it's naturally...
Some of the products. You know, we have 32 products out of coconut. So the coconut sugar, nectar and the amino comes from the sap of the coconut tree. So that's quite an interesting process because basically you climb the tree at night to put the pot in, and then in the morning you go and collect it.
That's an obvious question which has to be asked.
Yes.
Have you ever climbed a coconut tree?
I've tried to. You need really strong legs for it.
No, I can imagine. Have you trained your son to climb a coconut tree?
No, I think he might be able to do it. He's a lighter version.
Right.
So, Coconut Man, I've got your brochure here. There are loads and loads and loads of products. So where do you source all your stuff? And you know, what's your sort of plans for world domination?
Well, I don't plan world domination because we had a recent listing with Tesco after Dragon's Den, and we decided... It was a difficult decision because it's quite flattering for a young, not a young business, but a small-ish business to get approached by Tesco. But we decided not to work with them because our plans are to have presence in the health food retailers in Europe. So we're in 28 countries currently with retailers like, mostly in Sweden, we're in a retailer called Life. They have 400 stores. In France, we're with Naturalia. They have 150 stores. So, and also in the UK, we're quite heavily involved with the independents, like As Nature Intended. So that's our plans. You know, we want to be firmly in the health food trade.
Well, that's really interesting because we were talking about that last week, weren't we?
A couple of weeks ago, we were talking to Tessa Stewart about branding.
That's right. And what we're saying is that sometimes to get that high quality brand, to get that sort of name, actually going that route sometimes first is the best way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big part of your positioning and you know, what your promise is to the customer.
I'm learning about marketing right now, right? But for me, it's very important that I'm able to eat the products that I'm making. Because, for example, this nectar goes in everything, you know, hot chocolate, whatever I drink, it goes in there. So if it's not really something...
And that's like a replacement sugar, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't have refined sugar. I only have coconut sugar. I use coconut oil for cooking most of the time. I do put olive oil in my salads. So I need to be able to eat it first, and I don't want to be able to listen to someone saying, you know, change this, do that. Because the vegan angle has really opened my eyes, because recently I was looking at packaging, because we're even looking at the packaging in terms of vegan, the vegan angle of the packaging. So some of the foil laminated packaging has animal products in it, and I wasn't even aware of it.
And the ink as well.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's quite important, you know, when you talk to people, because for me, I'm not vegan, but on the other side of the coin, I don't want to leave this earth by so much and leave so much damage behind. You know, it's enough that I'm doing what I'm doing, but I don't want to start a company on the back of it.
I'm not intending on leaving this earth anytime soon, but well, thank you very much for joining us, Jacob. And people basically can find the Cocofina brand pretty much anywhere in terms of delis and things like that.
Mostly health food shops, 3,000 shops in the UK. So I would.
That's great. And if you want to find out more, you need to go on to cocofina.com.
That's
and
right.
A whole range of products there. I've just eaten that little snack bar. That's very good. I can recommend that. And Rachel Hugh and Neil Potts, the Burger Company, definitely going to go down your way. You're so excited. You're so passionate about it. I'm sure you're going to succeed.
Thank you so much.
Maybe we can do a little works trip, a little radio, food talk radio works trip.
That would
pop
be awesome.
Down there when you're open. And to find out more about that, it's theburgerco.com.
Exactly.
So it's the same as burger, but with a V.
Exactly. You've got it.
.com. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Food Talk Show, which has now syndicated dozens of radio stations across the UK and further afield from California to the Kent coast. Thank you to my fellow presenters, Guy Routledge.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Ollie Lloyd, great thank British you. Chefs. And if you want to interact with us on Twitter, it's at Food Talk Show. Tell us if you're a vegan. Tell us what you think of coconuts. And if you want to listen to any of our hundreds of podcasts, go to foodtalk.co.uk. Have a good week. Bye.